Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The eyes of the world were on New York City on what started out as a bright, beautiful day almost 1 year ago. On the 11th of September this year, the world will be watching again to see how the city marks the anniversary of that stunning, devastating terrorist attack. This week, Mayor Michael Bloomberg outlined plans for the day starting at dawn.
Early on the morning of September 11th, five bagpipe and drum processionals will begin to march towards the World Trade Center site from points in each of the five boroughs. The processionals will converge at the World Trade Center site just after 8 a.m. At 8:46 a.m., the moment when the first of the Twin Towers was struck by the first hijacked airliner, I will invite all New Yorkers to take part in a moment of silence.
The names of all 2,823 people who died that day will be read. And over the course of the day, people will deliver not new speeches, but historical American oratory, starting with the Gettysburg Address. And an eternal flame will be lit in Battery Park. But Bloomberg says he also wants it to be a normal day.
Government offices will not be closed on September 11th. And I expect that most places of business will be open. Students will attend classes. Workers will go to their jobs. We will carry on our responsibilities to our families and our city. However, this will not be an ordinary day for anyone in New York. For that reason, I urge all houses of worship in this city to open their doors throughout the day to provide occasions for individual prayer and reflection.
Connection listeners, how ought we to mark this moment? Today we speak with three people who have struggled with this dilemma: key planners for the observances in New York, at the Pentagon, and in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, where passengers thwarted another terrorist attack. We'll start with Jonathan Greenspun. He heads New York City's New York Mayor Bloomberg's Community Assistance Unit. He asked the public for their suggestions and received 4,500 emails, calls, and letters from all over the world.
The ceremony that the public had desired seemed to have a common strand with the following ideas: that the ceremony be dignified, that it be simple, and that there be some sort of message that shows that America and certainly New York will not be discouraged or disheartened long term about what happened. And so that provided the backdrop for what ultimately the city chose to do as far as plans.
It's been mentioned that there will be readings rather than speeches, readings from things like the Gettysburg Address. Why the decision to go with the readings?
Well, first of all, if you look at the readings, the Gettysburg Address, the Declaration of Independence, Roosevelt's Four Freedoms, if you look at the content of all of those words hold just as true now as they did in 1863, 1941, and 1776. They are words that talk about the strengths of this country, having to deal with acts of war and how we move on. And the decision to go with the reading of excerpts as opposed to speeches, I think, falls nicely in line with our desire not to in any way cheapen the day with someone getting up and grandstanding and making a speech for a long amount of time. I think that doing the excerpts will really set the tone for the day and do it in a way that is acceptable to the public and to the families and others.
I was there that day. Do you think that there is a frustration in finding the right words for something like this?
Well, I know that when it came to finding the right words, a tremendous amount of thought was put in. Obviously, when you say something, you want to make sure that no one says something that's inappropriate. I think what worked very well about our closing ceremony at Ground Zero was that there were no speeches. And I know a lot of people were very, very happy about that, because using symbols or gestures as opposed to words were equally as powerful, and it will likely be the same situation on September 11th.
Mr. Greenspan, I would think that a number of people would be approaching this day with dread. I'm not suggesting they don't want to commemorate what almost seems impossible to contemplate, but there's a heaviness and a sense of dread, I think, for some people as this is anticipated. So how might these readings that you've chosen, the ceremonies in Lower Manhattan, accomplish something that either frames that or provides some kind of working through for that or honors that?
I think what's important to remember is that people grieve in different ways. And what we in the city have tried to do is provide opportunities for people to take this day and have it in some ways be therapeutic and allow the people who continue to suffer and continue to grieve to use this day as a day that will in some ways help them. You know, we provided, when Ground Zero was open, we provided frequent visits to the site. And you would be amazed at people who for months had been reluctant to even come downtown, but had garnered up the courage to actually go and to visit the site and to connect with their loved one's last resting place. They communicated to us that they were so happy that they did it. Mm-hmm. They were so happy that they gathered the strength to go down, and they felt that we don't use the word closure. That's a word that a lot of family members have not particularly liked. But peace of mind, I think, is probably more appropriate. They walk away with peace of mind. And if anything that we do, even, you know, a handful of people who lost loved ones walk away with that peace of mind, I think that we will have felt that we did our job on September 11th for the one-year anniversary.
Do you think that there will be some kind of commemoration each year for some time to come?
Likely. I know that some family members have been a little nervous about this becoming a national holiday, because if you take a look at some other national holidays, there's been a commercialization that's taken place with regard to some holidays that were intended to honor those who gave their lives. But at the same time, I think we also have to just recognize that for the entire world, September 11th, 2001, marks a period in history which will remain with all of us for many, many years to come.
Well, Jonathan Greenspan, Commissioner of the Mayor's Community Assistance Unit in New York City, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Jackie.
We'll also speak in this hour with Susan Hankinson, who's coordinating the 9/11 observance in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And joining me now is Richard McGraw, who is the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Legislative Affairs, in charge of the 60 people planning the observance at the Pentagon. Welcome, Mr. McGraw. I understand that, and Connection listeners, we'd like you to get in on this, and let me give you the telephone number. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call as we discuss how to plan for observances on 9/11. 1-800-423-8255. Mr. McGraw, I understand that at the Pentagon, you want to characterize the day as an observance, not a memorial.
That's right, Jackie. We had a memorial last October. And the purpose of this observance is really to acknowledge and recognize the loss that occurred a year ago, but also to acknowledge what has happened since then, and to send a strong message that we are resilient and strong. This is not a memorial event per se.
60 people who are planning it, though, and in fact, the extent of your own title would suggest that a tremendous amount of thought is going into the word observance and the contemplation of the experience of the day.
Well, that's true, and our experience has not been markedly different than that I heard described in New York. A lot of people giving a lot of serious thought to exactly how we want to portray it, exactly how we want people to feel as they watch around the country, as they watch the only building left standing that was part of the attack. So we have some important messages to send.
I think, you know, I happen to have been in Arlington Cemetery, where you can actually see where the Pentagon wall was rebuilt. Would you take us, though, inside to some of your meetings and talk about, there must have been points of contention. There must have been moments where people did not agree, phrases that were trigger points without intending to be, and give us a sense of what it was like to grapple with this.
Well, I wouldn't describe any meeting as having points of contention. Everybody comes with a different perspective and with a different purpose. If you look at the, obviously, the first deference has to be paid to the families of the 184 people who were killed here.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there also a down clock for construction workers?
Well, though? I was going to say, at the same time, you have more than 1,000 contract workers who have devoted enormous amounts of energy to rebuild the Pentagon and get it back whole again. And when you walk on the site where those people are working, Jackie, I can tell you that the patriotism among those people is virtually palpable. You can just feel it. So they put up a countdown clock months ago when they began rebuilding to send a message that they are working on their own time schedule, and we will have this building, they said, whole again in a year or less. And they put up a clock to remind them of the timetable that they are on.
Okay.
And so when it reached zero, then they would have been whole. So they wanted to have that clock visible during the observance that we were going to have on the 11th. And we first thought, gee, that's a great idea, because that reflected what they were trying to do. But the more we thought about it, the more we realized that, gee, if I'm a family member sitting down on the front row watching what's going on the stage, and I'm seeing this clock above the stage remind me that exactly 1 year ago in 5 seconds is the time that my loved one died, that's not a very good thing. So we're trying to balance the two needs, the two desires.
Also joining us in this hour is Edward Linenthal, a historian whose interest is memory and memorials at U.S. battlefield sites. Welcome, Mr. Linenthal.
Thank you.
You have been a consultant to those trying to plan a memorial in Oklahoma City, also at Pearl Harbor. You just heard Mr. McGraw's story about the Pentagon. What do you think about this moment of observance?
One quick correction. I was not a consultant in Oklahoma City. I wrote a book about the impact of the Oklahoma City bombing on the community and on the wider culture called The Unfinished Bombing, Oklahoma City in American Memory.
Thank you.
And I've been fascinated to listen to these comments, very thoughtful comments about the events of commemorating September 11th. These are rituals of mourning, certainly for family members and survivors, as we bring these bereaved communities together. They're larger civic religious rituals for the wider American and world community. They're also rituals of protest against the anonymity of mass death in our time, and hence the importance of the reading of names, which has now become such a singular act at many, many commemorative places. In Oklahoma City, certainly, one of the things that family members and survivors really insisted upon was the centrality of faces and names and stories in the construction of the memorial and the museum, and certainly in the yearly anniversaries of that event. And I personally am very moved by what is going to happen in New York City and at the Pentagon. In New York, the rooting of what seems this almost unprecedented act of terrorism in America, rooting it not in speeches, but rooting it in a sacred American text to try and sort of situate this, to give a sense of the American resources of renewal that can be used, I think is fascinating. These yearly commemorative events
We're almost out of time. We will be back very, very soon, Mr. Linenthal. Connection listeners, when we come back, remembering 9/11, we want to talk about the difference between remembering a place and remembering a moment. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You're listening to The Connection. I'm Jackie Lydon. This is The Connection, and we're talking in this hour about planning for remembrances of 9/11. The number to call to join the conversation is 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK makes The Connection. My guests are Susan Hankinson, who is the Somerset County Flight 93 coordinator in Pennsylvania, and Richard McGraw, who is the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Legislative Affairs. He's planning the commemoration in Washington, D.C. at the Pentagon, and Ed Linenthal, who's the author of a book called The Unfinished Bombing, Oklahoma City in American Memory. Susan, let's go to you first. In Pennsylvania, we have a very different kind of site. We have a green field site out in the country where no one knew anyone who was on the plane. What have you been trying to do as you plan for an observance?
What we're trying to do is, first of all, to try to balance the needs of the Flight 93 families and the fact that this is, for many of them, the first time they will visit the site. They probably about 10 or 12 families that have not been able to attend any service at the site to this time, and also balance their need for solemn and dignified tribute to their family members who were lost that day, as well as balancing the need for the nation to reflect and also to move to the next steps in order to try to heal from the events of September 11th.
What were some of the considerations that you had as you anticipated this in terms of just anything, whatever you wanted to read, who you wanted to invite, how you wanted to recall the 40 passengers and crew members who were on the flight? Where to begin?
Well, first of all, our purpose was to deliver a dignified and elegant yet tasteful tribute that would both honor the sacrifice of those brave heroes of Flight 93 as well as console those that they left behind. We also wanted to convey the heartfelt feelings of Somerset County and our nation as a whole as we remember the one-year anniversary of the events of September 11th, and particularly as they relate to Flight 93. In doing that, we realized the need to remember this is a funeral service. This is a memorial service and nothing more than that, and to respect the wishes of the families as well as blend the needs of the nation into the service and the importance of the day. With that in mind, we are hopeful that we are planning exactly that, a very dignified tribute to those that lost their lives.
Ed Linenthal, it seems to me that the challenge for these planners is really a very difficult one because the whole country feels an ownership in these memories. People in Spokane, people in Iowa City, I mean, wherever you might be. And that is what you encountered as you considered what had happened in Oklahoma, isn't it?
It's very difficult. Every issue really it becomes a razor's edge issue. Who's on the dais? Who gets to speak? Is it a service primarily for family members and survivors? Is it a service for the wider community? Is it a time when you begin to talk about lessons? Is it a time when you try and support certain policy growing out of speeches that you give at these places, using the site as inspiration? To what end these kinds of things? And I think the thoughtful responses from all of the people involved in the constellation of 9/11 sites are emphasizing, in my mind, very wisely the importance of family members and survivors. And it's going to be interesting to see, of course, over a period of time, whether the commemoration of 9/11 becomes a yearly civic religious ritual. In Oklahoma City, for example, the city sponsored the first one. And when I visited with former Mayor Ron Norick, he made it very clear to me that the city was going to sponsor the first one, but that after that, the city would not sponsor any more. This sort of narrative of civic renewal would then take over and people would move on. But, of course, the ceremonies continued. They simply weren't sponsored by the city. So will these events become yearly events? Will they become part of the American civil religious calendar?
What should
the
people...
fears about commercialization, I think, are really interesting ones. If family members and survivors want to keep memories pure and sacred, then you have small, intense, almost private events. But once these events become part of the larger civic calendar, some kind of commercialization as it goes out into the culture is almost inevitable.
What should people in a small town, I happen to be from one in Wisconsin, do as they observe September 11th? Oshkosh, Wisconsin, that's not so small. Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, that is. These kinds of places that often feel very far from what is going on in the national debate.
Well, I think people become part of an imagined bereaved community largely through the power of the media and the tremendous number of unsolicited memorial designs that poured into Oklahoma City or New York, or the emails that Jonathan Greenspan received are evidence of this bereaved community that comes together through the power of the media and shares in the drama of the event, and the families and survivors telling their stories. But in addition, there are recognizable memorial activities that go on, be it in Oshkosh or Spokane or anywhere. People went to churches, people lit candles, people came together at public places. Attendance at historic sites rose throughout the country as people went to find some sense of orientation in the American past for these events. So there were a whole series of, I think, really moving ways that people sought to connect with these events that reminded me very much of the immediate aftermath of April 19th, 1995 in Oklahoma City.
Dick McGraw, you have a national symbol there at the Pentagon, as opposed to, say, the Fields of Pennsylvania. Do you think that service people across the world are going to be looking to the Pentagon observance for a sort of leadership about how to reflect on
that? Jackie, I think so. I really do. I think since we are in the business of pursuing those who attacked a year ago, we have several messages to send, it seems to me, and foremost, of course, is to the families that we have not and will not forget, and to the people who work in the Pentagon and American men and women in uniform around the world. It seems to me our message is we're here, we're strong, we're rebuilt, and we're very proud of what you're doing for us. And to our friends and allies and coalition partners around the world, it seems to me that we need to show them that the venerable Pentagon took a hit, but it never stopped working, and today is whole again, stronger than ever, and committed to pursuing terrorism.
Well, Mr. McGraw, thank you very much. I understand that you have to go, but we want to thank you for joining us.
You're entirely welcome. Thank you, Jackie.
You're listening to The Connection, and we're talking in this hour about planning, how to remember 9/11. My guests are Susan Hankinson, who is coordinating activities in Pennsylvania, and Edward Linenthal, historian, who's interested in how we remember American battlefield sites, and the author of a book called The Unfinished Bombing, Oklahoma City in American Memory. We want to hear from you, our listeners. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And let's go to Don, who is calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Hello, Don.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I just want to say that, first of all, an excellent program as always. And you know what's interesting? Mr. Linenthal actually brought up some points that I've actually been thinking independently. Please forgive me if I repeat anything that he says. But the first thing that I was actually calling about was that it's interesting. September 11, 2001 seems to be a date where everyone can pretty much remember where they were on that day and time when everything happened. I mean, it's almost like a day that's on par with like December 7th, mm-hmm. 1941, the day of Pearl Harbor.
So what should we do this year in 2002?
Well, definitely this year we have to not only remember what had happened on that day, but also we have to think about why, I'm sure that people are still mindful of terrorism even 11 months after the fact at this point. So what as we proceed in our remembrances of what had happened, we have to also be aware of what had happened and also the amount of public service that was given by those who tried to help out in the rescue and recovery on that day. But also the root causes, such as why certain people decided to take such drastic action against us.
Let's ask a planner if that is under consideration, or if it should be, if that's not a sort of political consideration. Susan Hankinson, will you be considering the root causes or much about terrorism in the observance of the actual day?
Actually, the theme of our tribute service for the families of Flight 93 is a time for honor and hope. We are, in our minds, trying to basically cover all of those aspects for them as we continue locally with the endeavors of this effort on September 11th, 2002. We feel we must act with the same conviction and purpose and dignity to, that those brave heroes acted with that fateful day. And in our efforts, we have not recognized the four terrorists of Flight 93. We have only recognized the four passengers and crew members of Flight 93. They have many times been paralleled to serving as volunteer soldiers mm-hmm. as they fought the first battle of terrorism over the skies of Pennsylvania. We are taking into consideration the family's needs in not recognizing terrorism, although for the permanent memorial, should that happen years from now, there may be an educational component to the terroristic happenings of September 11th and how that entered into to the entire picture of the day historically. But as far as the memorial service, no, we will not be even considering that for the day.
Thank you, Don, for calling. We're talking about planning how to observe 9/11. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to take a call from Bob. Hello, Bob. You're calling from Boston.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
Good, thank you.
Great show. I appreciate it. I'm very concerned about the differentiation between willing combatants or volunteers, as they were just characterized, who are really no more than victims. And it's the pain and the remembrance of their family which should be central to any kind of observances. When people seek to make this a place, as your former guest who had to go, I think his name was McGrath, talk about sending a message or using the day to send a message to talk about broader issues, I think it actually doesn't reflect very well on the fact that there were a lot of people asleep at the post and that these people who unfortunately died in these circumstances at the Pentagon, in New York, on Flight 93, these people had no choice in this matter. They did not choose to be heroes.
Ed Linenthal, that's a good point. Thank you. Ed Linenthal, how much of this should be private reflection and how much public questioning when it comes to an observance of something like the attack and the day?
Well, this, of course, is an issue that each community has to decide. I think a first anniversary particularly is a time when the emphasis is on a ritual of mourning and not when you have the service trying to serve larger kind of public functions about sending messages and other things. But that's my own sense of this. Mm-hmm. Your last caller, I think, raises a really interesting issue that becomes part of this. These are very complex sites. These are sites of mass murder, which have only recently become intensely remembered in American culture. And also, they are sites where people willingly gave their lives, rescuers who went into the World Trade Center, people in the plane, and your caller's point is well taken, that they were sort of captives on the plane in a way, but they chose to fight back and sort of decide their own fate. So one can talk about them as sacrificing their lives. This issue of becoming a victim or being a victim and then purposeful sacrifice is a very, very interesting one, and one that I personally think needs to be treated with respect and with care.
Well, you make a good point that this is a fairly, unless I'm missing something, a fairly recent development. I mean, mass graves under attack, apart from Pearl Harbor, is not something that we have had to deal with before, unlike
I'm not talking about battlefields so much, of course. Our country is speckled with moving battlefield memorials, but places that are sites of mass murder have mm-hmm. formerly in the culture before fairly recently been either effaced from the landscape, the buildings torn down, wiped out to erase their sort of toxic symbolic presence, or places are restored to their former use and people forget what they were used for. Here now we have intense remembering of very interesting complex sites of mass murder and of sacrifice, and also an event that is more than just mass murder, but resonates with language of warfare, and a day that is seemingly now taking its place with a day like Pearl Harbor or the assassination of JFK that represents a sort of epical American moment. And so with all of these strands that feed into the memorial pool, how one carries out, particularly on a first anniversary, because 1st, 5th, 10th, 50th, and hundreds, and then 300 and so on, are the really intense ones where national focus comes to these places, becomes very difficult. And listening in this program has been very interesting for me, because it seems to me that there's a very thoughtful and wise kind of balance and sensitivity, kind of moral stewardship in among people that are planning for all of these events.
Let's go to one more caller before we end this segment and hear from Grace, who's calling from Crescent, Wisconsin. Hello, Grace.
Hello. I've thought a lot about this, and thank you for hearing me. You know, if there were millions and millions of women wearing black burqas, it would send a message. It would not only be mourning on the forehead or on the heart of the American flag, and on the back, you'd have a Flight 94, and you'd have a picture of the Pentagon and a picture of the Twin Towers, and that would say it all. It would be mourning, and it would be certainly a visible thing that throughout the United States, you know, like
it'd be a gesture of solidarity, in your view.
Yes, it would show every small town, every little farming village, every city, the women, and then you in all the windows you have a black candle, and if you can't afford the little burqa, you know, even if it's black plastic, you carry a black rose. That will send the message.
Well, Grace, thank you very much for that suggestion, and we'd like to hear more. There must be many suggestions about what we ought to do as we plan how to remember 9/11. The number to call when we come back is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, and you're listening to The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Jackie Leiden, sitting in for Dick Gordon, and you're listening to The Connection. We're talking in this hour about how to plan to remember 9/11, and we've been talking with people who are charged with making commemorations happen in Washington, D.C., New York, and Pennsylvania. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Let's talk to Kelly, who's calling from Roslindale, Massachusetts. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, Jackie. My question, which the last caller dealt with to some degree, is, you know, we're talking so much about the public observances, but I've been talking to my friends about there's a lot of us who aren't going to these, or these are invitation only, or we don't want to sit by the TV and watch sort of all of this rehearsed because it's so painful. You know, what can we do locally? You know, what can we do with our neighbors? I mean, I'm thinking, you know, of getting together some of my neighbors for, you know, coffee or tea just to share sort of the, you know, the emotional enormity and impact of this. But has anybody heard of anything creative that people are doing on a local level? Because I think that's what most of us are really capable of doing.
I think that there are symphonies that various towns have been enlisted, and of kind of a rolling memorial that's going on as music is played in one city after another. But you're talking about what you can do in your neighborhood, what you can do amongst friends, maybe something that various groups of people might similarly do at the same time, something like that?
Yeah. it was like lovely, you know, the email that went around at this time last year, you know, people coming out with candles, something that's connected to the bigger events but people can do locally, I think, like the last caller suggested.
As we planned for this show, we talked with a widow who had lost her husband in the attack, saying that she didn't want to hear anything about it. She wished that she could go someplace where there was absolutely no mention whatsoever.
Interesting.
I think Ed Linenthal, one of our guests, what do you think about the desire to have absolutely silence on this, to sort of privately withdraw? Normal?
I think a kind of profound, full silence is often a very powerful response. Certainly in Israel, on Yom HaShoah, the Holocaust Remembrance Day, when there is a long moment of silence, sometimes silence is much more profound than words. And again, there's some real wisdom, it seemed to me, in Jonathan Greenspan's thoughts about the early morning of September 11th, when there will be music and there will be a sort of spare words used in that day. And I understand very well the emotions of family members who do not want to be immersed in memorial culture, who want to have this as a private and intimate day, not a public observable day.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps particularly as it's broadcast on television, which sometimes takes an image and loops it. Let's take another call. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about how to commemorate 9/11. Ada is calling from Lac des Flambeaux, Wisconsin.
Yes, thank you.
Hello.
I think it should be a sacred service. Thus far, no one has used the name of God, and it is even thoughtfully and wisely kept on our money. We should remember by acknowledging ourselves as not masters of our own destiny, but acknowledging God however we worship Him.
Mm-hmm.
We should try to change ourselves and our demands, to develop alternatives to oil for energy, and to become less greedy. We have been using far more than our share of the world's resources. We could cut back and
Let's
thus become more likable, surely less hated.
All right.
Give less impetus for deprived people of the world to become terrorists.
Okay, let's put your question, thank you, Ada, to Susan Hankinson. I'm interested in the notion of remembering God, a deity, and trying to do that in ways that will make sense. What are you doing in Pennsylvania?
Well, actually, Jackie, in answer to Ava's question, we locally, with our Flight 93 observance, have had to be very sensitive to the needs of the passengers and crew on board. And I'm sure the other locations at the Pentagon in New York City reflect this as well. We particularly had 9 religious affiliations, and we must be sensitive to all of their needs and be very cognizant of any religious affiliations. What we are suggesting is in remembrance of those people lost on September 11th, that, as one of your earlier callers mentioned, if you don't want to participate in any of the major services locally, we're asking that all of the churches toll their bells in remembrance, simply light candles, or just open your community churches, synagogues, for any individual or community prayer and time of reflection.
Mm-hmm. As is happening in New York, I know. We're talking in this hour about how to commemorate 9/11. The anniversary comes up very, very soon. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And let's go to another telephone call. Fred is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Hello?
Hello, Fred.
Yes, usually when humans have great tragedies, we try to learn from it, such as the Holocaust. We try to learn not to repeat that. I, to do justice to the people who died in the World Trade Centers, why don't we look at bombing that goes on all the time in the world and learn from it? you know.
So you would use it as a day to perhaps consider the question of our own military posture? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes, because let's face it, it's ugly to say that, but it's true. I mean, I hear that we bombed 2 million people in Vietnam. I suppose that changed the world for them, too. So this is a horrible act, okay. Whether it's a right bomb or a wrong bomb, it's a bomb. And okay. The people, the children die with it, are gone forever. So one way to celebrate, to commemorate this will be, let's stop a day, like that the whole world could just stop bombing for one day on the 9/11, and maybe we're going to have less bombing in the future.
Thank you very much for that thought, Fred. Thank you. Let's talk to Sam, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hi, Sam.
Basically, I, to reiterate, the previous caller was saying, you know, let's use it as a sort of a wake-up call to our foreign policy. And something that I would like to add to the conversation is that the whole cause for this thing was our support for Israel, which has not abated, and the Israeli state terrorism that they do to the Palestinians. Just today, for instance, you know, the 14 people that died last week, and just today another 6 and another 4 and another 8 that are not even mentioned in the media. And the cause for this attack, the resentment, is due to our support to the apartheid racist state of Israel.
All right, Sam, thank you very much. But we are talking about how to plan for remembering 9/11. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255. And we'll take another telephone call. Mary is calling from Appleton, Wisconsin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I would suggest that 9/11 this year might be an opportunity to counteract the horror of 9/11 in its original form, not with random acts of kindness across the country, but by focused acts of kindness where everyone who possibly can will do a kindness for someone else and let that be a wave across the nation.
Thank you. Ed Lindenthal, obviously, as we've just heard in this roundup of calls, 9/11 is going to stir our passions privately in so many different ways. I mean, however we translate that act, we are going to see it as a different sort of root cause or a personal act. I was interested in the call in from the caller who said, I wish there were a way for my friends and I to discuss this. You know, it makes you wonder if there were talking points or poems or things that might be given to small groups of people that they could do, perhaps at a specific time, to sort of share in this and yet have a private interpretation. What do you think?
There will be, I'm sure, webs of memory developed all around the country, and that caller reminded me of what I thought was very moving ceremonies that were community-sponsored, neighborhood-sponsored, that went on after Oklahoma City. And I'll be interested if these happen after the anniversary as well. Tree plantings. And mm-hmm. In some cases, a single family and the children would often sponsor this, would say, we want to plant a tree or a few trees in our front yard, in our backyard, in a park, in remembrance of those who were killed. And they would involve other families. And they would send then photos, like family photos, to the Oklahoma City Memorial and say, this is the tree planting, and we did some readings. So I think there'll be lots of ways that people sort of custom memorialization. But the whole range of calls is fascinating because it seems to me, Jackie, it shows how much memorialization is in fact tied with all kinds of other parts of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And the difficulty of just, you know, keeping it as a kind of insular event. It's a fascinating thing to listen to.
Susan Hankinson, in Pennsylvania, how much did people want to feel a sort of kinship with what had happened? And this was a somewhat different situation in that I understand nobody in Pennsylvania knew the people on the plane, obviously, and now you've had a year to get to know those people.
Yes, Jackie, and it is different, quite different than some of the other locations. None of the passengers and crew of Flight 93 were Pennsylvania residents, and they are spread literally across the world. We do want to keep in mind all of their needs, and actually, we have gotten to know those people quite well. Our Somerset County coroner continues to keep in close contact with each one of them, and I working with them over the past year as well. Tremendous, an incredible group of people. They are truly inspiring, and they give us strength to continue with this endeavor. Actually, one of your earlier callers had asked what else could be done to commemorate them. In our program for September 11th, we have, in fact, one of the young sisters of one of the Flight 93 passengers who has asked that we reflect by having a one moment of silence, a 1 minute of silence to commemorate the day and recognize worldwide peace globally. So that might be something that we can pass from here today across the world, to actually have that one moment of silence to recognize the events of that day.
Let's try and get in just one more call. CP is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hello.
Hi. I was just wondering, I don't know, I'm not a psychiatrist, but if you're looking after the people who lost loved ones, I just wonder, is it best to keep constantly bringing this up year after year, or is it best to forget? I know personally myself, I would like something like that. I would like to try to forget about it, let time heal it, unless we're trying to use this 9/11 thing as a call to war, which I don't think, but...
CP, can I ask you to consider this? Do you think that perhaps nationally we all feel that we lost someone that day, whether we in fact did or not? We all lost something.
I'm sure we have. Yes, right. But I, as I say, personally, I don't know what psychiatrists or psychologists tell you, that is it best to constantly keep bringing this up? Does this add to the healing process?
Let's ask Ed Linenthal that. How do you plan to commemorate that day, Ed Linenthal?
I will be at the Chicago Historical Society on that day, participating in a panel. And the question that your caller raises is a really interesting one, and it, I think, depends very much on the individual. To go back to a word, Jackie, that came up in the opening when you asked really about closure, and the difficulties with that word, and Jonathan Greenspan pointed to that word as well as not as being problematic. It's in my mind a really obscene word to think about closure of these events. We're going to be living with the impact of these events for a very, very long time. Family members and survivors will say that out of the impact of violence, we put together new selves, not the old selves that were before. So how one remembers, whether one remembers, whether forgetting is a part of the healing process is very much a part, I think, of individual decision on all this.
CP, does that answer your question?
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for contributing it. Susan Hankinson, you will be in Pennsylvania that day. Any closing thoughts?
Only in that we all try to act together in remembering the day, the magnitude, and again, we see locally people from around the country continue to come to the site because they must reflect. And as Ed just mentioned, it's a personal reflection. They feel a strong desire to heal and move forward.
Thanks very much. My guests today are Susan Hankinson, coordinator of Flight 93 activities in Somerset County, Pennsylvania. Edward Linenthal is the author of The Unfinished Bombing, Oklahoma City, in American Memory. We were joined earlier by Richard McGraw, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Legislative Affairs, and Jonathan Greenspun, Commissioner of the Mayor's Community Assistance Unit in New York City. Special thanks today to Dan Bobkoff of On the Media and Tom Allen of Wisconsin Public Radio in Madison. I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
Just ahead in the second hour of The Connection.